I mean, I thought they were all sort of very mixed up in that sex.
Oh, well, I mean, they are, of course, but I mean...
I'm sure they're confused.
I mean, she lives at Tennessee Williams.
Awesome.
Well,
Rachel doesn't want you to take them to begin with. I can see why you hesitate to call back and say, "Are they there?"
No, well, she won't give them up. She says she rereads them.
Well, I tried to call her, but of course then she's gone now.
They couldn't. Where could they have been lost to? Nobody ever takes papers if I left them in the hall.
Do you suppose they just
burned up?
No, they couldn't have burned up, but I'm just kind of a bad
person. Oh, I swear you had that when we got into the house last night.
But you see, I got into my purse, and that Picasso, I don't know why I had onto that Picasso.
Well, there it is.
Huh?
I said, there it is.
I know it. So I think I just picked that up and left the things in the seat.
Well, poor Betty and Rachel, they had something at least to talk about.
Excepting I had to keep shooting my mouth off, you know, all of it meaningless.
Well, it's horrible to be around.
I thought that he was in prison, and how could it be, you know, he's out of prison here, but I didn't ask any questions. I just greeted him very warmly, happily. He sat down in the room, he looked around, and he said, "Well, you know we're dead. We're all dead. We've been dead for years." Well, it was a powerful dream, and the next morning I told Russell all about it. You know, I was terribly it upset me. And God Almighty, the morning mail comes, and here's a letter from Russell's mother. And inside the clipping was the account of his leave.
Yeah.
Well, why was he against you? I thought you were his friend.
No,
I mean,
he wasn't against us. No, but we were afraid that he might have somehow gotten himself disturbed to the place where he would feel that he was against us, you see. No, we've never been against him in any way.
Of course, he frankly said he was going to kill us. I mean, like Kay and...
Well, he told him to buy the word right along with it.
I mean, he considered that we'd betrayed him, you know. Arthur had his case.
For years,
and Stillwater, you know, and Arthur would say to him, "Now, don't say a word." He would get up and make a speech how he was a martyr, you know, how he was he wanted to make himself a civil liberties case,
yeah.
You know, which obviously he couldn't.
There's no ground for it.
He still has a bullet in his buttock. The state can never... have a case against him because he's got the evidence.
Well, the bullet in his
he's
buttock.
He's got the evidence in his buttock. You remember when Lucille was trying to take the bullet?
Oh.
Yeah. It was going to work to his spine, you know, and
I know.
We went around. Oh. He still got it. He would never give it up because this is the only proof, you know, that the state would have to show that he's the one who was shot that night.
Well, I can well believe you kept your shades down.
Well, we put our psychic shades on, you see, too.
Well, he came out with three. Oh, just Fikema gave me one to read and asked me what my advice would be, what you should say. He wanted to just tell him to burn them up and start over and try to, you know, express something. it all ended up with these, oh, there was a labor leader, I mean, all this, and a communist, and all this social, and they had a fight in the basement, and they beheaded each other, and there were the heads sitting in the basement, you know, just senseless horror, no meaning for it, you know. Well, he never got them published, any of them, but...
Wonder how he makes a living out there on the farm.
Well, I think his mother, you know, and father left. Well, he does advertising and various things like that.
So do you still know any of the Reeves, Betty Reeves, and her husband? Is he alive?
No.
How long ago
he died? A long time ago. He died in the 30s. End of the 30s. But you'll be very surprised when I tell you what did happen to Betty Reeves. Remember James Gray?
Yeah.
Well, Sophie, his wife. I know if you ever met her.
No, but I know the name.
Well, she died a very terrible death of this, the epidermis turning to stone.
Oh, my.
I don't know. They know nothing about it. She was...
Yeah, I know.
They experimented at Mayo's with her, hoping each year that something would turn up, you know, to show... Just, you know, she just turned to stone. Until she was so heavy she couldn't lie down. I know, just apparently the whole experimental. And finally, they got in the car and just drove south to Mexico. I mean, you know, they just left the children and they just got in the car and just drove to Mexico. And she died in about 2 weeks in Mexico. And, oh, Jim was terribly, you know, she was his soil and life, actually, you know, this ephemeral feminine man, you know, I mean, he lived in her. And he didn't like his sons. He had two sons, and I don't know if you remember, they lost a child, a girl, Virginia.
Oh, Virginia?
And
how old was she when she died?
And she was just Deborah's age, and,
what in the world killed her?
The dust storms. She got phlebitis from the dust, from breathing the dust. Lots of children died. You know, I used to put a wet mask on Rachel and Deborah that whole summer. We had that. I guess that was the year before these came up, the drought, was it?
It was the year before.
And, well, anyhow, make a long, very long story short. Jim married Betty Reed.
How that was done?
Well, you know, she's fabulously wealthy. She's head of the Reeves. They have all the Pillsbury accounts. You know,
yes, I know that.
So they live out in, Sophie and Jim bought a wonderful place out in the St. Croix. Quite a while before Sophie died. And so they live out there in the summer, and they live at Captiva, Florida, with Grace Flandreau and Alice O'Brien and stuff in the... And
if you mention that again, I'm going to walk you right now. But you're going to have to pay for that. God damn you to hell.
Well, think again before you deprive me of one of the necessities.
Oh, okay. You know why? Because you usually, I mean, you take the glass pot and you have to go right out and piss it out. So
well,
I thought
you need a water. John, I'm very grateful to you for all these mason jars of water. I think it's wonderful.
Now we're running out of ice, though. Somebody else is using our ice.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's Catherine. She's got it.
Yeah. They got company, so...
Are you putting it back when you
yeah.
get
it?
Oh, it's all filled with empty, with all these...
It's all water.
They're all water now, they're all...
I'll turn up
I
the electrical a little bit, and they'll freeze.
Turn up the heat on that.
Might
freezing.
Forget.
They'll unfreeze quicker.
turn off the heat on
the freeze.
Well, what about your box? Is there any ice in there? No? No.
I
didn't
have any
pencil. Oh. Could turn it off.
Nothing.
I couldn't. Yeah, I turned it off.
Yeah, you turn it up, but don't forget to turn it down.
Yeah,
we might have ice all over.
We might
have ice all
It's 7 o'clock, my money.
Shoot.
A very rural character rang the doorbell. You know, so funny, a guy comes in to sell his cattle or something. And he left a note for Catherine. He says, I'm Hiram from Podunkville. Says, you remember I met you down in the bar on Hennepin, and I bought you those stockings? He says, I'm gonna be waiting down at the bar there till 4:30 for you. If you don't come today, I'll be waiting for tomorrow. She's on relief and she doesn't take anything less than taxi.
Why does she do that?
Hmm?
Oh.
I actually don't know. Then they come and bring big sacks of food they come in.
Next time, will he punish you back?
Both of you, they must.
I feel as if I put in my spin on that.
On what?
Being in Catherine's position. I put in my spin.
I feel as if my head too. I'm trying to do this far around the distributor. Or something. My.
You know, I see her going out with this nymphomaniac concentration of going to meet this the other thing, you know, this dressing up boy. I just have a terrible pang when I see her going out. You know, I think of all my nymph days. You know, this this anticipation that, you know, you're going to meet this thing. That's
nothing's ever going to happen in there.
No. It was like Olive. Olive wrote me a letter from the Gilmer, you know, and she said, Marilyn, when I get on my little bonnet, you know, Olive always wore these clothes of about 16 years old, you know, full skirts and a little bonnet. She says, no one thinks I'm a year over 18.
How old is she?
That's Wilmer. Well,
she's older than I.
About your age.
I think she's older
than I am.
I'm 47.
No, you're not.
I am too. I'm 47. I was born in 1900. I'm
she's
out
now, isn't she?
Oh, you're 1900. You don't even know how old you are.
No.
She was here. She looks very well. She gained a little weight. And,
I never liked her very well, you know, Maribel.
Who is this now?
You
who is
had
this creature?
You used to play the piano or something. Didn't you? I mean, didn't you go to her house?
I didn't like her though because she had John around. You know, I could never stand him.
Oh,
I thought he was just revolting.
I have found a note in my notebook when she and John came out to Lake, and I said, "What good can come of these two ideal beings?"
He always reminded me of quite slick.
I know it.
Oh, I know what you mean. That kind of a horrible.
Slug.
Yeah,
well, he
I'm
had that will,
kind of
you know, he's going to get his way, he's going to,
I thought he was terrible.
He's going to have Olive, and he's going to have fame, he's going to have this.
Are you still a flower?
I did drop some cigarettes.
Well, I guess you burned yourself up or something, didn't you?
No, got hot.
Oh, terrible.
You
to
good.
Isn't it funny, that green shirt makes me have a terrible pang in my heart.
I'm Irish.
that's Deborah's green shirt.
Oh.
Isn't that the green shirt I gave you? That I had a bunch of shirts?
I think so.
It's funny how inanimate objects do.
I
you
love
might
it.
Suddenly feel like Deborah in that, you know.
Oh, I love it very much. I think
well,
I love Deborah.
Inanimate objects. I mean, he's a very lively human being.
Unfortunately.
I know, but this was when Deborah got married, she and Bernie both had... They always wore shirts life. They had red shirts, green shirts, plaid shirts, and they always...
Yeah, you did give me this one.
And they always, you know, wore them together, and they were so beautiful, you know. They were just like two young...
This is a beautiful shirt.
...fawns. When they were both 18 and got married. Bernie is beautiful. He looks like a Persian prince of some sort. You know, he's just all one little neat piece.
You paused it. It sounded like you got him on a skewer.
Black.
Wow. I'm just on a skewer. I mean, he was one little neat piece.
Is that damnable tape still going? Is that what that was?
Oh. I guess so.
Jumped right up through the ceiling with your
thing. That's
the
thing.
Get a cabin paper.
She's so much a part of that
couch.
Yeah. She is.
we're sort of like mushrooms or fungus. You know?
No.
We kind of grow in a place. I mean, all of a sudden here we are in this.
No, it's not
I
bad.
Can't see how really good. I told Russell he had to take that responsibility for getting us out of here. Well, I got so paralyzed I couldn't even call.
You don't want to leave, of course.
But she couldn't sign her name. I don't want to leave.
I didn't think I was ever going to get out of your house that day. I thought I'd been to sea for 3 days.
Well, we've been
to
sea. We've been at sea.
They have curtains, you know, that pull across the whole side of the window, you know, and here we were in the winter inside of this wonderful house of theirs, you know.
Something like Rachel.
Talking and drinking and
as usual.
Each other.
And loving each other.
Loving each other.
Doing some fight work. Fighting a little bit and loving each other.
And then, that morning, you know, I got on the bus. All the trees were just absolutely coated with frost.
Everything was crystallized, you see. So, I mean, it was a great demonstration of everything.
I know. As Lucille said, nobody came until I got ready to leave.
And the minute Meredith left the house, people came from Lincoln, Nebraska, and all this business stuff just poured down, just like a torrent. It was just fantastic.
There was nothing. I didn't even hear a milk van or a garbage van.
There wasn't anything.
I was no condition to cope with all that.
You see, everything was
in the same shock. You know, it takes a long time to get over, you know. And I didn't have this opportunity, you know, to relax and get over Meridell before I had to do business.
Yeah, but I
well, this man was coming half an hour after I left.
He did, too. He
remember, I took
right
you on the bus
schedule.
Vehicle and I kissed you and I embraced you. And I wanted you to know that, and that's just the way it is, you know, and all that. And then you got in the bus and I went home. And all hell broke loose. And all these people began pouring in. Dr. Powell came up, you know.
Everybody had to all the time you were there.
All of Lucille's brothers and sisters came pouring in.
I willed, you know, I psychically willed everyone to stay away. I didn't want any
you're very successful. Well, that was a wonderful time. I wish you'd come down again, Meridell.
Well,
that was a
if
wonderful
I don't get my
time. You know,
taken away. I'd like to drive, you know, slowly down through
go
Iowa.
Go past nothing.
But Juliana loved you so much, and it meant so much to her. I mean, that she was a person, you know, that she didn't know until that time. You see, now she knows you, but she'd love to see you again. She'd love to know you even better.
I remember that wonderful moment when she came in and saw me goodbye and said, come again. I thought that was a very high...
You're such a fool for me.
Oh, Meridell, that is... You can put it that way for heaven's sake.
Yes, she did. She was very beautiful. I didn't realize the whole, you know, the whole thing that Lucille told me that. Well, anyhow, we got wonderful children.
In spite of everything.
Well, I can tell you one thing.
Step up on.
I don't ever expect Rachel to say come again to me after last night. I mean, I'm getting all stewed up. I mean,
sure. Rachel accepts anything.
She probably
may not understand it.
Don't come again.
She accepts it.
You know, that's the thing about this generation, you know, Nia and Nina running around there with that baby, that Hitler's dream she had yesterday. All these people and all these kids, you know, they take it so for granted, you know, that they'll have all these kids. And honestly, for us to have Juliana, for you to have Rachel and Deborah, it was such a triumph, you know. I didn't take any of it for granted. They just take it for granted, which I think is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But they never will understand or know what it meant not to have that way of life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, the thing that terrifies me is this, that, I mean, how long can this exist, I mean, this fantasy that we live in our society, as we know it, I mean, now, I mean,
mm-hmm.
not what we want, but I mean what we're in, actually, yeah. How long can this last?
It can't last.
You see, the whole thing now is, it becomes so utterly fantastic. I mean, mortgages upon mortgages upon mortgages.
Yeah.
Everything is bankrupt, you see. How long can it last?
This
and then what? Then you have idiocy, you see, in which the wrong button is pushed the wrong time.
The dishwasher starts doing the laundry.
And all of a sudden, you find that you push the button that will put the missile in the wrong place at the wrong time. No, I'm terrified, I mean, for the future.
I don't think it should be. The terrifying time ended in 1950.
No, Meridell, I mean, I'm scared that, look, I mean, some damn fool had sat there, you see, in Omaha, would push the wrong button. All right, then he has all this junk hurled all over the whole world, all this destruction. Then, look, and look, a little corporal could get drunk and destroy the world.
Well, it's possible. Also, other things are possible.
Meridell, this Ella, you came out of the car yesterday. What does her husband do? How do they live? I heard she had 303 or 302 or 309 months or something. Who are they?
Well, he is an American citizen. He wanted you on his side.
Yeah, he wanted to hire me.
He wanted to buy her. And we made it very clear that Lucille was not for sale. Old Meridell was never really, I mean, you'd have to live with us, I mean, to understand all these things. John, really, it's just fantastic.
Something.
But you see, here we are, I mean, people that have nothing. And we still don't have enough. But I mean, we
that's
will
quite,
have.
Kind of
the point is, you see, I mean, we will have.
I mean, you have hope to something.
No.
Yeah, you have a way of approaching something. You do
well,
have a way of. Not a
let's
way
say
of
we
life.
Don't beat around the bush.
Well, that's the thing I just want
isn't
to
that right, Meridell?
You have a business objective.
I say we don't beat around the bush. I mean, we just hit the thing head on and just take it. I mean, just the bull
well,
by the horn.
It doesn't make any sense.
Well,
these salesmen, you know, they're accustomed to spending 20, 25 minutes, you know, in the Yankee. Well, the minute they walk through the door, I say, what do you want?
That floors
you. You're not a drink, nothing.
No, nothing.
What
oh, no, huh?
So, just like that.
Well, if they've got the courage to answer that, you know.
Then they have something.
Why, then we, and
well,
I say, sit
course,
down.
Of course,
yeah.
No, I just won't spend any time. It's ridiculous, all this talk and tomfoolery. Let's get right down to the point. What do you have?
What do you want to sell? Let's see it and let's get over it. And fast. Remember the
about 5 minutes for anyone who walks through that.
The bullet salesman that was in not too long ago. Van Borgendine.
Mm-hmm.
You know. I told him, I said, now look here. I said, you tell me exactly what you have to sell. I'd like to know what it is. I'd like to compare prices. And let's get it taken care of in short order, because I'm busy and I'm tired. Well, the poor son of a bitch, he said, well, I'm going to Florida and I'll see you in 2 weeks. So he went to Florida and he called me from St.
Figure
Louis.
Out what he had.
He went to Florida and he called me from St. Louis and he said, I'm going to stop by and see you tomorrow. I said, fine. I said, do you know what we're talking about now? Well, yes, I've got all the figures. Well, he came in, and this is the truth, you see. I mean, here he went to Florida, and then he went to St. Louis, and he called, and he came in. I said, fine, now this is what I want. These are the figures. How much for tuberous begonias? How much for this? How much for that? Now I can look at it, and we don't have to talk. He said, you have to realize that I've gone way out of my way. I said, well, I don't know where you're going or anything. Well, he said, I was going to Canada. I said, why would you have to come up and see me then? He said, well, I thought that I should see you personally and present these figures. Well, I said, my God, all you have to do is mail it to me. I can read.
Do you buy the nursery stock?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Gee, your gardening comes you in good stead.
Naturally.
One salesman came in, Maradell, right after he got in the office.
Dear.
Oh,
I know poor sons of bitches. I mean, when they hit us, I mean, they're just bang.
Printing salesman or something, and he made a fatal mistake. He started out. He said, well, he said to you, I miss your brother. I said, you do? He said, yes. He said, you know, your brother and I did an awful lot to help the Republicans get in the last time. And I said, and with that, I said, you get out.
I ran.
Yeah. I said, I'll tell you something,
that
young man.
That's still petty.
That was
like,
terrible.
You get out.
I said, I'll tell you something, young man. You've lost all of the business you ever hoped to get in this office. And I said, if you haven't learned yet, it's high time you learn now. In business, there is no religion and no politics. Good day.
My God, you have stretchers outside the door. Ambulances where you can pick them up.
I don't know what happens to them after I say get out.
My God, the ulcers and various things.
Well, I don't have them.
She's giving them to other people.
The relief department gets them.
Well, I'm not going to have any of that shit. We'll talk business and that's it.
Well, I mean, that's the way I treated the bulb salesman.
That's the way
you... Give me the figures. That's all I want.
Let's not spend any time talking
that's
about
the
well,
way
I don't even got
well,
anything about anything
this
else.
This nursery run, I mean, do you buy it?
We buy it, yeah. Last fall, we...
But you have to then be in touch with the whole nursery.
We're purchased 150,000 bulbs. At least that. Maybe more, I guess. Final analysis.
Do you still sell to when I was there before you told me that the nursery sold to the UN whatever it is in the UN that lifts up the horticultural level or something. What is the field nursery?
I don't know what that one was, but
we don't have a bulb to spend for Goodwill. I don't know.
We sell it for profit.
I know, but you told me a long story when I was there, something about the field nursery selling to the UNESCO.
That was not...
Big hybrid
corn.
No,
you see, that's not our business. You see, this...
Oh, it was hybrid corn.
Yeah, but you see, we're not in that at all, whatsoever.
I thought it was a general
No. No, we're talking about our own private business, where we buy a certain amount of stuff and we expect to sell it at a profit. If you can't sell for a profit, why would you buy it? You see. And for the first time, Maradell, I mean, through all the years, I mean, here was all this expensive junk printed, you see, that we sent out in the fall. You see, all this sheets of junk, you know, beautiful color photographs of tulips and so on and so forth. This fall, there was no literature whatsoever. We did nothing but strict radio advertising and in our magazine advertising. And we sold, oh, three or four times what we did the year before. And we made a lot of money off of it. And that's why, you see, I mean, then Borgundine, he said, just think of Burgundy. I said, well, I'd much prefer thinking about Burgundy, but, you know, let's pursue it.
Well, now, where are these nurseries now? Where you raise these bulbs and stuff? Or do
in
you buy them? Or do you,
in Holland.
They, huh?
Most of the stuff we import.
We buy them from Holland.
Oh, well, you don't have any nurseries there, then?
Oh, no, I mean, no. I mean,
you
we buy all
buy
this
the
stuff.
And then sell
that's
it.
Right.
No, we don't know.
It's
anymore.
Strictly buying and selling.
Oh, that must be very tricky.
It is tricky.
Yeah.
Because now look, in the backyard now, there are at least...
I woke up just like this, that I set the office afire.
Well, I made Russell get up and dress. And as he says, Lucille, if I go down there, the police. He said, you're not supposed to go into even your own place of business, you know. You're not supposed to be going in there at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I said, all right, if the police come, tell them that you got nervous. Got to wondering if you closed the safe. Well, at any rate, oh, we had a terrible fight before I get him up and dressed, you know. Out of a sound sleep to go down and see if the office is on fire. And I promised and I pleaded and I begged. I said, Russell, if you don't go, I have to get dressed and call a cab. I have to go down there and see if the thing is not burning. And I said, now listen, I promise you something, Russell. If you will go tonight, like this, which is just insane, and I knew it, but I was helpless with it. I said, if you will do this tonight, I will never again, as long as I live, ask you to get up in the middle of the night and go down and see if I've set the office. So he went. He went, and he came back, and he said, just as I thought. He said, the police pulled up. Wanted to know what I was doing. My own business. And I just explained that we were nervous about the safe. Well, they could understand that. So he went in, when he came back, I was just sitting there trembling. Heard the car pull in, and he opened the door. And it reminds me of what Bob said to her that day. I said, well, is everything all right? And he says, nothing left but ashes. We told you about the time that Howard said, how's the seal? And Bob says, why, she's dead.
Yeah.
Well, remind me, Russell came in, nothing there but ashes. I don't know what that came from. I don't know why that suddenly overtook me. That horrible phobia that I had set my parents' house afire and then the office afire.
That's a strange thing, is setting a fire, isn't it? Paul had such a great lot of material. A lot of these kids, you know, were arsonists. Setting a fire, things in the absence of love or something. But I don't quite understand it, but...
I don't know. Of course, in my case, it was simple enough. Perfect parents, you know. I hated them so, and hated their house so, that... Of course, unconsciously, I'm sure I wanted to just put a torch to it and burn it down. But why all of a sudden one day, you know, what triggered it off then? I don't know. But I get awfully nervous and almost hysterical every time the fire goes.
Yeah, well, I got a phobia. I didn't even know it.
That's a great compliment.
Thank you, Jack.
I know. What does it mean?
The sweater. The perspire. What do I mean, sweater?
Well, you've done a lot of that.
Well,
the sweater
perspiring.
Isn't
that nice? It's
kind of
nice. The perspire.
I felt kind of discouraged about Robin, you know.
Robin?
Robin. I mean,
what? Robin.
Yeah. For this
Robin
reason. Well, you see, you wouldn't understand this, John, but... It was always too difficult to explain how come Rachel Endeavor's last name is LeSueur. We went all through that for years. Then down this goddamn tape, they introduced Robin as Robin LeSueur, and I thought, Jesus, they all through again. You can never seem to get another name anywhere. It just goes on and on. Didn't that occur
LeSueur,
to you?
Yeah, I was kind of mad that Matt did that, because, although, you know, Deborah is known by... Deborah LeSueur, Deborah Stauffer, and Jackie Brown.
Jackie Brown?
what's the little fellow called now? His name is
Woody Wolf.
Oh yeah.
Sounds like something you found in the timber. You know,
Woody Wolf LeSueur?
No, Stauffer.
Oh, Stauffer.
Well, he'll be LeSueur, don't worry.
No, the LeSueur dynasty is over.
Sweater.
Ended, thank God. There's
no
more LeSueur.
They're over there, right there in the bags. They're right there. Lucille ate them today.
Oh, yeah, I know, but that's awfully dusty.
Certainly it's disheartening. No, but after all, she ate them.
It's not right now, John. You saw her drink the... drink Miriam.
Did you look at those ashes? Aren't they peculiar?
Well,
splinted?
No. But Lucille drank them.
Oh, good.
Fortified
it. I'm not easily dissuaded if I want to.
Well, you know how Miriam
is.
You
drink along with it.
To be thrown into a glass of whiskey.
Barbara here,
you know how
Mary
used to say, I never drink, I want to be in control of my faculties.
She announces that everyone's dead drunk. Everyone's
and
drunk.
Who would want to be in control of Mary's faculties?
In the terror. Either so glazed by, you know, that they couldn't focus on Mary as she announced it, or in the grip of such a hangover, you know, that you're shaking and sick. And then Mary would make these announcements. You know, all I can remember was that everyone was always a terrible drunk. I remember. And I were both just roaring drunk, you know. Yeah, this old washing machine going, you know. And I remember that I would put things through the ringer.
I spent time in that laundry room.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
I'd start things through the ringer, and Max was supposed to catch them, you know. And I'd turn and I'd say, here comes the roaster. Here comes Arthur's pants. Oh, God. Here's Marion's nightgown.
I never knew that you and Mag did the washing.
Oh, Mag.
Well, Maridol, you were so engrossed, you see. I mean, after all, and why not? I was the one person that made any difference.
I'll tell you,
I was engrossed in making a living, in trying to write something.
You had this great love, you see. At that time, it was Lucille and Mac were doing the laundry.
I'll tell you what.
Now, look, I know because that's when I met Lucille.
I went
down there in the laundry room.
According to Mary, there was nobody in the laundry but her.
That's right.
Now, let me tell you one thing. And that was the first time that I ever went to 2521 Harriet. That was, I hauled out all my phonographic equipment, you see, at this time I had very good stuff, you know, for sound. Not hi-fi as we have now, but the best you could have at that time. Remember that, Lucille? And where did we take it? We took it down to the laundry room. And we sat there in the sheets and junk pile up, you know, like
the basement was the only place you could get any.
Well, of course. So, I mean, we sat there and listened to music, you know, and Mac was down there.
I'll tell you what, Mac and I...
No, we used to go down and Mac was lying on the basement floor with various and sundry people. And
yeah.
We never knew who was going to turn up there.
Well, when Mary, you know, she'd get on with
only too well, I know all this, you see.
And she, you know, the laundry would stack up, you know, where it was encroaching on the second floor. You know?
And
then
of course he opened the door
and
everything.
Shout, no one around here ever does anything. Arthur wouldn't have a shirt to wear to the office, you know, and there'd be all that great rumpus and commotion. And Mary would get, oh, so terribly mad. And kick around, you know, the sheet would appear, Mary, and kick at it, you know. Well, when it got that bad, then Mac and I would go down to the basement and go along.
That's a really, you and Mac doing the laundry.
Well, it's true,
all
though,
that
Maridol. It's
chair.
True, though. It's true.
The first time Russell ever...
Oh, I'm sure they did it once in a while.
The first time Russell was ever in the kitchen at 2521 Harriet.
Well, of course, I was kind of confounded, so I opened the door and I thought I was going to go into the bathroom. My God, I opened this door and all this laundry just poured down over.
It was that back staircase.
You remember the back
staircase? No one had been up in 3 years.
People.
Innocently open the door. Oh my God! Bird cages, everything, you know, just came avalanche down.
Yes,
it got me.
The canaries
knocking down on the floor.
Where did we meet Russell?
Where did we meet Russell?
Yes.
Well, I met you long before I met Lucille.
Yeah. Where was that? How was that?
I don't know, but that's where it was.
Oh.
said he had lunch with you once at Miller's Cafeteria long before I
met. Long before we ever, I ever met with Sybil.
Well, how did we meet?
Well, we can talk about that tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Well, you make it sound as if you'd have my assignation somewhere.
Or maybe we didn't know it. No, we can talk about that another
time. One of the delightful memories I have, Meridell 2521, is an evening meeting. And the room got kind of crowded. And that old Davenport, Mary, she had Kitter Corner, you know, across the corner of the room. And someone figured that if they moved that Davenport at a straight angle, you could get some more chairs in. They moved that Davenport, and my God!
Everything fell.
Everything that it for years, you know, you'd thrown it behind there, and the only thing that was holding it up, you know, was the Davenport. They moved that, and it just roared down.
It was a crash. Yeah, I remember that.
Oh,
only too well. I remember that only too well.
Well, when Mary would go into those great passions of hers, you know, and make these announcements about wanting all the faculties to the House of Grunt. Well, you know, that always sobered me, though. And I tell you, the fur just flew around there. Everyone got up Meridell and staggered around and began to try and take action.
Well, still, you remember before we were married, I went out many a time to 2521 Harriet, and there was dinner, you know, and Mary and Emmy with all this junk, you know, going. I mean, everything just in frenzy, you know. I couldn't eat a thing. I couldn't even pick up a fork. I was paralyzed with all this activity.
Mary always thought that at the table when you're eating, there should be high class social discussion.
That's right. Therefore, I couldn't eat.
I mean, even if she jammed it down with your pancakes.
Oh, I couldn't eat a thing.
We should have, this is where the family met, and the whole elevation of the family should be elevated.
Higher. We got to the table. I remember that.
I knew we got to the table. I couldn't eat. I know I went upstairs and went to bed with you, but I mean, I couldn't eat at the table. That was.
No, I tell you, there was a very formal routine in that house. Mm-hmm. By God,
well, you must admit that the people went to bed with a whole lot of people in that house.
Oh, that's true. Any, you never knew anything that came out. Arthur would sit there in the morning at the table, you know, with his breakfast. He had the faintest notion he was going to come out of the corner.
Yeah. I remember one time we were looking for Mag, and he went down, and he was lying on the cement floor in the basement with a little gal who was tramping across the country, who came up, you know, we brought them all up. Or that couch, which is still in the front room, you know, we'd come down. Mary would say, "Do you recognize him?" Somebody on the
you
couch.
Know how Mac
we'd look at his feet, and we'd look at his head. One time it was Earl Robinson or Pete Seeger or somebody like that, you know.
Do you know how Mac used to pee off the window? Don't you remember that?
Yeah.
The whole side of the house, there was a cascade of frozen piss.
I had a tenant like that. The house was still discolored.
I remember that Mac had an iron bedstead. He saw it off and used it for an ashtray. Those colors were too cool.
That, and then he peed out the window. I know all this very well.
How did you get onto that?
Look, I spent a lot of time there.
Yeah.
And you were, at this time, so infatuated with Bob and everything. You didn't know that I knew anything about this, but I did. Because I lived there, practically. You didn't
I don't
know
where you all get this idea that I was so infatuated that
well,
I didn't know anything. I mean, I must have been walking around my mouth.
You were.
Hanging open.
You were just absolutely messed up.
I was earning a living.
Well, that's enough to make anyone with their mouth going that's enough to make anyone feel that their mouth is
and I was turning over my whole check to that 2521 Harriet Menage.
I remember I made Mac turn white as a ghost once because he was saying how convenient it was, you know, to have the window to piss out of. I said real quietly.
Well, these are truths, you see, that you don't even know.
I, well...
Well, my...
go ahead.
I said
real
quietly.
I said, what if the window would come down on him? He was so shaken, I don't think he ever did.
Well, Meridell, the thing is this, that, I mean, after all, at this time, this is, I mean, when your relationship with Bob was so terrific, brilliant, I mean, no one, I mean, there's no criticism. I mean, these are fantasies. These are 1, 2, 3 facts.
Yes, but you're leaving out a whole lot of understanding.
We're leaving
my
out
life
you.
As a woman and my struggles and what I had to meet.
What?
Well, I mean, just economically. Just economically.
Right, now, look, Lucille was making money. I was making money. We did not in any way impose on anyone in that house. We took care of our everything, I mean, and then some. It was just that we happened to be there at that time. And that's just the way it was.
Well, what do you mean you happened to be there at that time?
Because Lucille was there and that was the short period, I mean, in which we went through a courtship thing. Well, and then we got married, and then we were out of it, but quick. But there were about 2 or 3 months, or not even that long, about 2 months, wasn't it?
Oh, honey, I don't know. It's all pretty
about
vague.
2 months. I mean, that Lucille and I spent a great deal of time at 2521 Harriet. I mean, that, to me, is just like a home now, even if it's even demolished.
Well, that was a good thing that Mary made in a lot of
it. Indeed. I mean,
those
are the things I understand and respect, you see.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you have to realize that we went through all this stuff, I mean, with Nance.
I think the more commotion there was around there, the happier Mary and Nance.
Probably.
Yeah, and she didn't
yeah.
like it quiet. She and Arthur, you know, they didn't get on a bit well when they were alone there quiet. That's all Arthur wanted, and the last thing in the world she wanted.
Mm-hmm.
She felt
oh,
real
she
good when
right.
there was a lot of hell breaking loose.
Yes, but I don't know, you know, as a matter of fact, you know, that in that period, I'm just reading some of Arthur's letters, you know, they didn't have enough money to pay the rent on that place. I mean, they were going to be evicted from that place. They couldn't, it was only $40.
What year was that?
Oh, in the Depression, 32 and 33, that's when, I mean, we had to
this is 45 and 46 when I'm talking about.
45 and 46, the God thinks you're crazy.
I'm 34. I mean.
34.
34.
I married you
I mean,
in 1937.
Yeah, well, 35 and 37 and 36.
Oh, you're confused, Russell. That's so bad.
You got married when?
37.
No, but I mean, you know, it was a depression. We were all... we hadn't ganged up, but we couldn't have lived. I don't think Arthur in 32 was making $20 a month.
I know I.
And Marion went around with Parents magazine from door to door. In the beginning of the Depression.
I know Arthur's told me about those days. He told me how he happened to buy that washing machine. I mean, I remember all this very vividly. Things were much better for the time I had there.
Well, because we were on WPA, that's the only reason why.
Yeah, but, well, I think Arthur was doing better, too, than his law practice, wasn't
he? No, he wasn't. It wasn't until 37 when he was appointed judge by Benson, you know, that he was able to make anything. Benson appointed him as judge then.
Yes, I remember that.
But he was, you know, well, no lawyers, thousands of lawyers went under.
Mm-hmm.
Entirely. And of course Arthur was an
the head of the Writers Project. He comes from Chicago, Parker Vandermark. Parker Thornton Vandermark. Well, he wanted to buy a painting of Max. He'd seen one that we had there at the house.
The one we gave to Doris.
Oh, the book.
Well, we gave it to Doris because, I mean, she had to have it more than we did, so we gave it to her. Now, don't you do that? I guess you do.
Well, we went by the house, I remember. We drove over. He had a car. We drove over. And he bought a painting of Max that night. And I remember he gave him a check. And Lorraine instantly snatched it, I remember, and went over to only a block from Lindale. Yeah, that was Lindale. To the drugstore over there because there was something the baby needed in the line of Percomorphin or something.
Yeah, went over and got.
And I remember she ran out the door. I mean, she just left right then and there and went to the drugstore and got this medicine. I've never forgotten that.
Well, you know, the thing that I'm there again, I mean, you see, I mean, what can you do? I mean, you have painting, sure. But, I mean, it's not yours. I mean, no one ever owns a painting. You know that, Maribel. And it's something that you, it's with you a little bit, and then it goes someplace else. Isn't that right?
Well, it's just what I said about Bob's painting.
Yeah.
I don't want everyone to give me Bob's paintings. I mean, I want them to have them.
That's right. All right, in turn, I mean, now this, that was one of my very favorite paintings. But Doris was, had to have it, so I gave it to her, and that was that.
Did I tell you when Ethel and I went up to see Doris?
It was there.
Uh-huh.
Was it there?
Uh-huh.
Well, you see, Mary,
it's a beautiful painting.
It's perfectly beautiful, but I mean, all right, it was ours. It went away.
You mean
so
Doris
far.
Just liked it?
That's right. But I mean, how can you ever claim anything like that? I mean, no one should own anything like that.
Yeah, I feel that way, too.
So
well, I don't want
so
Paul
you give
to
up.
Give me
I mean,
Bob's painting.
You give up.
I mean,
yes,
I'm very happy that they're hanging there. I wouldn't like her to maybe sell them to some stranger or something.
No, but I mean, when you know that there's, well, you know what I mean.
Russell, let's go to bed, dear. Tomorrow we've got to go home and...
I can take you to the airport now. I have four wheels. You're still getting nervous.
No, I'm not getting nervous. I just think we ought to go to bed.
Well, are you tired?
No, I'm not going to bed, but I'm not going anywhere tomorrow either.
Well, I'd like to have a kite nap.
Jesus, an hour ago you had a night cap.
Well, I'll have another kite nap then.
Oh, this fire, John and I have got to tend here. This marvelous Yule log. This is what we should have had for Christmas.
Isn't
it perfect?
Dear.
Huh?
Once.
That's perfect. Fire.
I didn't know you were such. Now, from now on, you're the fire builder here.
Now, there is a thing you see that makes people feel so uneasy.
Not me?
Yeah. You were talking about that earlier today. Why do people, I mean, just kind of shudder up and dry away? I mean.
Because I'm always trying to get them off the bed, I guess.
I guess that's it. I mean, all right, now, why did Carol say to me, oh, I wouldn't let Lucille know this for anything in the world? But look, I have whiskey in every single part of her kitchen. You see, I'm a drunk. I would never let Lucille know because she'd never understand it.
Well, I was just a drunk along with her. I don't know why the hell that
I
understand that.
You feel critical.
Oh, I'm not critical about anyone or anything.
When you're tired?
I want people to behave the way I think they should behave.
But except that you're not critical.
Saying that because I thought that was real crazy. I've got my standards. People better meet
than
her else.
Now, if Marion could have ever said that, she would might have ascended S upwards into heaven.
Levitated with her behind that.
S ending, as Bobby used to say.
S ending into heaven.
S ending into heaven.
Oh, I mean, just a little bit of that, Meridale. Of course, I mean, it'll take, as I said, months, years to digest all of it. I had no idea that Bob had written anything. You see, all I knew of Bob was, I mean, this incredible, this fabulous, this gorging of, I mean, of all these things, I mean, which you have various languages, various. I mean, all these layers, you know, going every which way. But here you find it in his handwriting.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it unbelievable?
I was just getting him to write. I mean, I think he had a very great talent for writing. You know,
his use of words, his parenthesizing, I mean, every bit of it. I can just
tell. We spent an evening with Robert Penn Warren, who was just fascinated with Bob's... he has a little touch of that. Did you say like James Joyce?
Oh, yeah. Like Finnegan's Wake.
Do you have that recording of James Joyce reading Finnegan's Wake?
No. I'll have to buy
it. I'll send you a tape of it.
Oh, do you have one?
If I knew where it was, I'd put it now, but I don't know where anything is now.
I don't doubt that. For your glasses. For your glasses.
I don't even want to know where anything is. I got four wheels out there, I know.
They move.
They move. Didn't they, John?
They move nice.
What kind of
that
car
was
is
lovely,
that?
Huh?
What kind of car is that? I've never seen it.
It's a 1950 Chevrolet.
My God, you're much better off than we are.
John was just saying last night, weren't you, John, about what a marvelous summer we had and all the places we went?
Tremendous.
Well, it's true.
The year was tremendous. It was very tremendous. There's no other way of saying it.
And that old bus, we went up to Red Lake.
To hear guys.
Bob and John stole a couple of tombstones.
Well, that was with Al. Well,
but
yeah.
You never made anything out of them. You never carved them.
Yeah, but
you owe it to the dead to carve those tombstones you stole.
Yeah, I'm still thinking about it. Boy, I do have the picture that we saw.
Oh,
remember this graveyard?
This is where Deborah lives. This is their house. They just what?
Or you remember this this house?
This is wonderful. You know how Deborah always looks? This is her domestic. The house?
Yeah, with two windows, you know. And it looked like the head of some primitive thing, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yes, yes.
The two eyes and the windows. And
you gotta paint
I got that
house, Russell. Doesn't that look like
you
San
got
Francisco?
I think
oh,
I'll
yeah.
start to work on that.
You can only paint that in a poesque way. I mean, you can't take a picture of it. In fact, we took a picture of it.
Did we?
But it lacks... you just have to paint it in a, you know, a very poesque way.
Certainly.
That was beautiful.
Like a human being, something that stuck.
Macabre
stuck out
thing.
There. And the words above the windows were, I don't know, some kind of cemetery, but I got it upstairs now. I got it out.
Oh, have you?
I'm going to start working on it. But
oh, good.
But
and then your fabulous remarks as we came down the hill.
That looks like an eyebrow.
Mm-hmm.
The words above the windows and door.
Oh, that was a terrifying thing.
She sure got a lot of sense for that, baby. Wings.
Well, this is the, you know, what do you call it? You know, when everybody brings the ritual.
Shower.
Shower.
You see the picture with it on the wall with all of Deborah's clothes?
Some kind of seminal shower.
Robin and Deborah and Bernie, they all made these clothes.
Some kind of explosion.
Oh! You know, the baby didn't come, and it got to be Halloween.
No.
And I went out, and I bought a mask of a wolf.
Oh,
and it was really terrible because I didn't know that Robin had this feeling, so we put the mask of the wolf in the baby's crib. And we put the baby's cap, you know, and all the things. And Robin came home from school. Oh, this was terrible. But I didn't realize that Robin was willing to accept anything for a baby. See, and we said, the baby has come. You know, and Robin goes and looks. Oh, you know, she accepts it. And
Oh, Mary.
And she's willing to accept this. You see, I almost died because I thought she'd just laugh. You know, it was Halloween. And she says, oh, she says, well. And then she turned and looked at Deborah, and she saw Deborah still had the baby inside.